Hey, soccer friends. I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Before we kick off today's episode, I got something that could save you a ton of time this season. If you're a grassroots coach trying to juggle work, life, and soccer, Soccer Coach Weekly is an absolute game changer. Since 2006, they have been trusted by coaches from all over the world, delivering fun, ready-to-go drills that keep players focused, learning, and loving the game, even when you're short on time. And here's the best part. Chat by the Pitch listeners get 50% off a full year of premium access. Just click the link in show notes and use the promo code EN50 at checkout. That's EN50 for half off. Plan fast, coach smart, Soccer Coach Weekly.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, we kick off part one with a powerful two-part conversation with Dr. Travis Dorsch, the founder of Families and Youth Sports at Utah State University. We're diving into the big myth in youth sports, the idea of return on investment. What do we really get from our time, money, and emotion we pour into our kids' athletic journey? Is it college scholarships, championships, or something more deeper? Dr. Dorsch has spent years studying parent-athlete dynamic. In this first part, we unpack how money, motivation, and meaning intersect. It's about shifting our perspective from ROI to the human ROI, raising kids who love the game, stay connected, and grow through the experience. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Travis Dorsch. I'm a professor at Utah State University, and I'm the founding director of the Families in Sport Lab. And in the lab, my students and I do research on really anything and everything having to do with youth sports and the family's involvement in that space. We look at sibling relationships, at the parent-athlete relationship. We look at coaching, and then all of those macro-level influence as well, how communities and organizations support young people, how societies differ and are the same in the ways that they design and deliver opportunities in sport for young people. And we've also jumped into certain kind of topic-specific areas, like looking at abuse in sport, looking at sport as it's delivered in different continents, Africa specifically. We've looked at the applied side of sport. So really, my lab has become very student-driven. I've got a number of PhD students and master's students that are doing work with me, and I like to let them ask and answer the beautiful questions. And I also allow my own experiences as a youth sport parent to kind of guide and deliver me to where I go. I have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, both of whom are competitive skiers, and we spend over 150 days a year together on snow. So I'm learning right along as I'm teaching and having a lot of fun on the journey.
So you're getting, as I like to call it, a education by fire with being on the sideline of the slopes there.
There's a few ways to become educated. One is reading books, another is doing research, and the other is being in the fire, as you say, kind of drinking out of the fire hose. Definitely having kids in sports has changed the way that I view my profession, my work, my interactions with my kids and my students. As I look back on some of my earlier work, my thesis and dissertation work, and some of my early research before I had children, it's very different than it is now. It's colored by a very different lens, and there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean it was wrong or bad. It just means that lens now, being a sport parent, has provided me with a new and unique way of thinking about all things families and sport.
When I actually first found you, I was actually starting off my coaching career as a parent that had no soccer background and trying to figure out how to help parents better figure out how to help themselves. And I did a massive amount of research. One of my first videos I came across was Dare to Chill. And it's parents, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's parents screaming on the sideline. It's pretty much telling them to take a chill pill, relax, enjoy the game, crochet, do yoga, whatever it is to calm you down. And then the very next video I found was yours. I remember this vividly. And I sat there and watched your TEDx talk about 3 times through. And it really resonated with me because we as parents tend to look for a return on investment. And if you start going on all the social forums, you look at it as I want my kid to get a scholarship, or my kid's going to go pro. And this will be my return investment will be them getting a scholarship or them going pro. And I took a step back and I was like, what are we doing as parents to help our kids to actually do better? And so let's go through your TED talk. You asked, should parents be expecting some type of return in their investment? What kind of feedback or on this do you get from this question, or how do people perceive this when you talk to them?
I'm going to give you an answer that you might not expect, and that is yes, parents should expect some form of return on their investment. Parents are dedicating huge amounts of time, emotional energy, money into the sport participation of their children. So yes, absolutely, they should want some form of return on that investment. However, what that return is a million-dollar question. If we're defining the return as a high school starting spot, a college scholarship, a professional contract, we're putting an awful lot of pressure on our children, ourselves, and our families. We know the percentages of that roughly 2% of high school athletes are going to go on and play in college, and roughly 2% of those who go on and play in college are going to go on and play professionally. Quick math, you can do the math real quick and figure out that the odds are slim. I encourage parents to think about, what are the important things that in the very beginning, why did you sign your children up for sports? Because you wanted them to become leaders. You wanted them to learn to respect authority figures. You wanted them to learn how to win and lose gracefully. You wanted them to learn how to be part of a team. All of those things that naturally can come from sport, and I say can come because they're not automatic. We need coaches and parents and communities to design and deliver sport appropriately. But all of those things that we know to be true about sport, we want our kids to achieve. So yes, circling back now to your question, yes, we absolutely should want some form of return. But how we define that return, I think, is really the important question for parents.
Deep diving here in Texas, every parent is thinking, how do I describe it? They come from the American football background. And it is win at all cost. It is your players not being successful if they aren't putting up the stats. And over this journey that I've had over the last 2 years, it's always been, in my mind, it's always been about the development, even early on with my kids. But at the end of the day, parents only see development as winning. And I think the side of this, the return on investment you're talking about, I like what you said. It was talking about what are we expecting and then relieving, taking a step back even farther about the pressure we're adding is what other aspects. So with that being said, how do you look at or give advice to or have written about in your papers about what parents should expect then? Or is there anything that you have given guidance or advice towards with this?
I think communication is key. All too often, I think parents view the world through their adult lens and they expect that their goals are their child's goals. And that's often not the case. I encourage parents all the time, whether it's on a seasonal basis or biweekly basis, just to get down into the weeds with your son or daughter and ask them what they want to get out of their experience. It might be that the most joy and pleasure for them in sport comes from being with their friends, comes from being outside, comes from moving their bodies. And so if we're imposing certain goals that don't align with those goals, now we have this misalignment between parents and athletes and maybe even coaches and club as well. I think the most important for everybody involved in this ecosystem to have a positive experience is goal alignment. And what that means is that parents, and they're not alone, it's also incumbent upon coaches to do this and programs to do this. But really, we need everybody to talk to the athletes and figure out what it is they want. And then how can we support you in providing that?
I like that. It brings me back to an interview that I've done, and it talks about the player plus parent equals one. And I think we forget that as taking a step back, as we're trying to develop athletes, or it doesn't matter what you're trying to develop. A coworker is, especially when it comes to kids, it's aligning the goals. Like you said, it's the player's goals, the parent's goals, them together equals the end, equals one person. And I think we forget that as parents, people forget that as coaches. And I think we have to take that step back and really realize what's going on with all that and how it truly affects the athletes that we're trying to help as parents or coaches.
Yeah, a child needs to remain at the center of it all, right? And on the periphery of that, you've got parents, you've got siblings, you've got coaches, you've got teammates, you've got organizations and communities. But so long as the child remains at the center, I think we're on solid footing. It's when the parents position themselves at the center or the coach positions themselves at the center, then we start to run into some problems. And we've all seen examples of that.
We're seeing more and more examples of that as we have gone. Come on. In your TED Talk, you also talk about the commodification of youth athletes. Has this idea evolved more since then? Because I feel when that TEDx talk came out, it was a different world. And now it has, I would say, gone even faster because I'm remembering, right, it was before COVID, a few years before COVID. And now since COVID's happened, I feel like a lot of changes have happened very quickly since then.
Yeah, and just the whole landscape of elite amateur sport with NIL and the college setting. I wish I had been a college athlete in NIL. I wouldn't be talking to you today. I'd be on a yacht in the Caribbean, I think. It is a different world. And I think when you think about all of that opportunity that's there for the taking and parents seeing all of that, it's not just the scholarship anymore, which might be $100,000 or $200,000, but now we're talking about millions of dollars for the highest level athletes, especially in football and men's basketball. That's a lot of chum in the water for the sharks to be feeding at. And I think parents are doing anything and everything they can to try and position their young people to go and get that. And that's a dangerous approach to youth sport when from the time our children are 6, 7, 8, we're already thinking about what might their NIL future look like, what might their college and or professional future look like. I always talk to parents and they say, when should we start thinking about these things? And I say, first, your child has to grow into their body and their mind. What I mean by that is, let's let the kids get through puberty. Let's see what kind of body they're going to have. If mom and dad are 5'6 and 5'8, your kid's probably not going to go play in the NBA. But more than that, the kid not only has to have the right genetic talent and gifts and skill, but also they have to have the drive and the motivation and the love and the passion for it all. So I think letting the child grow into, again, their body and mind is really important until we start really focusing or honing in on that one or two sports that they can pursue excellence in.
I think that's important. We tend to glorify our 6 and 7 year olds thinking they're going to be pros when they haven't even hit puberty yet, and it all goes downhill after there. We don't know what direction our athletes will be after that lovely phase. They might be the tallest kid on the field right now and they go through puberty. They could be like my dad that never grew past 5'6 after sixth grade. And I look at it as different angles. I guess I became more of a realist than I thought I have over the time. The commodification of youth sports has reached down to the high school level. I don't know if you saw that recently here in Texas. They are now doing it at the high school level, got approved. Do you think this is doing a put more pressure on these athletes, and how would you might circumvent the players or parents to have this realistic conversation then? Because in my mind, they just ruined all sports for kids.
Yes, is the short answer. But I think we as a society need to just take a step back for a moment. And again, go back to that question that I shared earlier. And that was, why do we do this at all? Why do we put our kids in sports at all? That first inclination when our kid is 3 or 4 years old, and we get them and learn to play soccer or learn to play t-ball. Our first goal is not for them to go be a college athlete or a professional athlete. It's because we want them to learn to love to move their bodies. I think if we can keep that in mind, it'll go a long way as allowing them to become young adults and ultimately older adults who also love to move their body. And I think that's a problem in our society, right? That sport ends at whatever age it ends. We know most kids drop out between 11 and 13. We know that even those who play through high school tend to then drop out at 18. We don't really have a ton of opportunities for these young people who are now growing into adult bodies and adult minds to go on and continue just being an athlete, whether or not that's in an organized way or not. It's not cool to be a college intramural athlete or just to go down to the rec and play hoops with your friends. So I think prioritizing the cool factor of just being out there moving your body and falling in love with being with people that have like minds and want to have fun, I think would go a long way towards creating lifelong movers, right? Lifelong people who love to move their body.
I think that truly is something that we as parents forget about in the long term. It is always looking to the future. We as parents in our house, I feel like we signed our kids up to find something they love and something they can enjoy. And like you said, they're moving, they're being active. We're really big on limiting screen time and allowing them to be what I call kids from my generation. I'm 41. We clocked out of the parents' house. We didn't play video games. Video games were just coming on the scene when I was, I don't remember, 12 or 13 years old. The kids would, when it was raining out, that's when you played video games. It wasn't because of, or 9 o'clock at night, we can't be outside anymore. That's when kids started to play video games. It wasn't because we were not outside or being inside all day playing video games. So it was to create that love for the game. And you talked about why we originally do it and what advice when you talk about it, and you kind of covered a few times, is it all worth it in the end? I looked at a chart the other day and someone said their average spend for a kid that plays travel ECNL soccer in the United States is probably close to $100,000, maybe $125,000, depending on the level and where they live in the country, to the low end, about $50,000. So how would you tell parents it's worth it at the end of the day when they're dropping pretty much a full-on ride scholarship if they go to a public college?
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends on their goals, right? If the goals are to get a college scholarship and you spend all that money and don't get the college scholarship, then no, it's not worth it, right? But if your goals are all these things we've been talking about for the last 15 minutes, then absolutely it can be a success regardless of what the competitive outcome might be. So I think, right, figuring out in your family for your children, what does success look like? That's a great activity. Just sit down and define success. And I think parents would learn real quickly that they have a lot of different goals, goals that can be achieved regardless of the competitive outcomes their child achieves. And if they achieve those goals, they do become a better leader. If they do learn to become a great young citizen, if they do learn to respect authority figures and their teammates and their coaches and their competitors, if they can learn to lose and win gracefully, all those things, then yes, it can be a success regardless of how much money you spend, right? And I think the important thing is that parents stay within their means so it doesn't feel like such a huge burden and like a mortgage is riding on my child's success, you know. And it's no different than buying them clothes or buying them food or sending them to a private school. Like we do all those things because it enhances their life. Some of them are fiduciary responsibilities. Some of them are supplementary responsibilities. But nonetheless, we want to provide the most we can for our children. So sport is no different. It's a supplementary educational experience. And to the extent that we can provide in many of those experiences, our kids will come out the back end, hopefully, as better humans, better employees, better spouses and partners. Right? Better everything, just better people. So that's what I encourage parents to think about.
I like that. I think we spend too much focusing on the future instead of the present. I can only use my son as an example, and I get comments from friends and people that listen to this podcast. But my son, from a young age, his goal was never to go to college. It's never to do anything collegiately. It's been from the age of 5 or 6 to go pro. And it's like we as a family says our job is to help facilitate that dream, but also reel in the reality at the same time of achieving those end goals for him. We don't care what happens. You just need to put the effort and the hard work in. That's what we ask as family.
And that's the lesson, right? Like, I think back on everything I learned as a college and professional athlete, and it makes my life so much easier, right? When I'm having a rough patch at work, or when my wife and I get into an argument, or when it's just one of those parenting days, all those things, I can apply the lessons that I learned as an athlete to navigate those here and now experiences as a 45-year-old adult. So I think, look, we want to create better citizens, better adults, or adaptive people who can thrive in the society that they're going to live in. And to the extent we can do that, sport is a great vehicle for learning those lessons.
I like that. You talked earlier, a little bit earlier, and you do talk quite a bit about it. TED Talk and some of your papers about the ecosystems that are out there within youth sports. How can parents actually apply the idea of this today to day? And how can we work within these systems to better provide guidance for our athletes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the most important lesson of using a systems lens to approach youth sport and how we position the athlete is to, again, keep the child at the center of that and understand that as a parent, we play a peripheral role in allowing our child to thrive, but also that we must navigate that child's relationship with their siblings, with their peers, with their coaches, with their organizations, with the communities in which they participate. Our role as a parent is to scaffold that learning process, right? For a six-year-old, they need everything, right? We're the nutritionist, the psychologist, the chauffeur, the launderer, we're the sleep therapist, everything, right? And then what I mean by scaffolding is slowly but surely, as that child ages, we kind of take the hands off a little bit and we let the child, to the extent that they're able and ready, let them take ownership of that experience. Maybe that means packing their bag and getting their gear ready for the next morning. Maybe that means a 12-year-old having a tough conversation with a coach about playing time. Maybe that means going and talking to the community rec director and asking if he and his friends can get on the field for some extra time. All these things that, again, allow the child to learn those lessons that will be valuable later in life, we need to scaffold those as parents. And slowly but surely create young adults, not just, I've heard of helicopter parents. All of your listeners have probably heard of helicopter parents that are just hovering and observing everything. I like to actually refer to snowplow parents. And snowplow parents are these parents who are out front of their kid, just pushing all the obstacles out of the way, right? Sometimes we have to let our kids drive through the snow and figure out how to operate that four-wheel drive and figure out what to do when the tires start spinning and then they're sliding off the road. And I think it's important to allow our kids to do that.
With that, with what you're just talking about and letting them have the conversation, is it a case-by-case basis? We try very heavily to make sure our son has that conversation. Or my daughter now, it's like she's 7, and if she has a question, she has to go ask it. We will stand there and listen because we want to know what the answer is. And if it needs to be just the two of them, we'll let them have the conversation, and then we'll have a conversation with the coach and our player, and trying to making sure we're all on the same page at the end of the day. But it's, what age do you recommend, or do you just say let it happen organically? Because go ahead.
Your first intuition was spot on, and that is, it's got to be sort of child-directed, and that might mean a 7-year-old over here is ready to do that, but an 11-year-old over here is just now learning the skills, having the skill set to be able to do that. So it is end of one with the child, and we can't just say at this age a child ought to be doing this, right? We need to take our cues from that child, and some mature more quickly, some mature more slowly, but they all need to get to the end point, and that is becoming a fully functioning adult human being when they leave our house. To the extent that parents can just keep that goal in mind. And look, when we throw our kids out to the wolves at 18 or whenever that happens, they need to be able to navigate the tough world that they're going to live in and apply all the lessons that they're learning in sports. And I think sport, maybe more than anything else, is such a wonderful vehicle to learn those skill sets. So yeah, I think parents have a really important role and responsibility in helping guide their kids through sport.
I don't know how many different athletes I've talked to and parents now that have had the luxury of having their kids be little adults at the age of 12, 13, 14 years old, and going from the parents' nest and going overseas. And now traveling as a young adult, they're 22, 23, sometimes 16, depending on who I was talking to. Their kids can handle getting on an airplane, traveling alone. And as a parent, it's scary. But looking at these parents that have done it, it's like we have this conversation. I don't know how these parents send their kids cross country at 12 years old to be picked up by normally a stranger that's a coach and going to a soccer camp cross country. It makes me panic a little bit inside because I know how my 11-year-old is. My seven-year-old, I'd probably trust more. But that's the difference. It's learning to let go. As you have talked about this and gone through this, where do you see the biggest breakdown is between parents, coaches, and the clubs even the players? I'm betting I know the answer already because you said it several times.
It's back to what I talked about earlier, right? And that's goal misalignment. And I think, you know, to the extent that a coach or a club has a certain set of goals, which are usually outlaid on a website or in a preseason meeting, to the extent that those differ from what the parent wants to get out of the experience for their child, and to the extent that differs from what the child wants to get out of the experience playing for this team or club, man, that's bad news. Big problems can happen if there's goal misalignment there. So I think this is where the roles and responsibilities of the parent come in, is doing that homework, doing that research, figuring out, is this the right club? Is this the right coach? Communicating regularly throughout that process with their athlete, saying, hey, this is what the team values. What do you want to get out of this experience? How can I help? How can the club help? We're here to support you. Ultimately, giving ownership to the athlete is maybe the most important thing, because when it's the athlete's decision, their motivation feels a lot different than if a parent just says, hey, you're playing for this team, this coach, this club. Okay. What I mean by that, by the motivation feels different, is when we ourselves as human beings make a decision, we have the choice, autonomy, volition to make a decision, we then have to own that decision. And we will fight our tails off to let everybody in the world know that it was the right decision. But if someone else makes a decision for us and tells us what we have to do, it's very easy to just put up walls and be like, hey, what? It's not my fault. This didn't work out. So I think giving that ownership, giving that sort of first right of refusal, if you want to think about it that way, to your child, to your athletes, so they then own it. And so they then will try and figure out any way to make it work, whether that's communicating with you, communicating with their coach, with their teammates, with the club. Let them own it and let them take the reins.
All right, a quick break. This one's for my fellow grassroots coaches. We all know how tough it is to keep every kid engaged and still running a great session when time is tight. That's why I'm excited to partner with Soccer Coach Weekly. Since 2006, they've helped over 50,000 coaches, parents, teachers from all over the world. And here's the best part. As a Chat by the Pitch listener, you can get 50% off a full year of premium access. Just click the link in the show notes and apply the code EN50. And again, that's EN50 for 50% off. Plan fast, coach smart, Soccer Coach Weekly.
I think that's a very unique thing that happens. I don't think a lot of parents do that. I sit here and talk to parents on the sideline quite a bit, probably more than I should, devolve ideas and opinions probably more than I should. And that's one thing I hear. It's, we're making this decision based on what we want for him, or this is the right decision for her, for this team, because this team's a winning team. It's not really about what the athlete wants. It's what the parents want. And I'll be honest, and I'm sorry to my son's coaches that are going to hear this right now, but this past spring, whatever you want to call it, tryout season for soccer, my son was in a hard spot. He didn't know what team he wanted to be on. He has about a 75% say in it. We have about a 25% say in it. And I'll be honest, because we have to write the check at the end of the day. We normally don't overrule him too often, but he tried out for a team that's a year older. And he did not want to leave his old team because there's some kids that were coming to that team that he was excited for the social aspect, to get to play with top level kids that are his age.
Yep.
But at the same time, this other team he tried out for is a year older, and he knows it will push him in the right direction. And so same club, thankfully. And so we told the coaches what we were doing, and the coaches sat down and had a conversation themselves before they talked to us. And they said, we want him on both teams. And it just took the relief off my son a great deal. But my son knew playing for the year older team will get him where he wants to be. But psychologically speaking, and he didn't put it those words, but socially speaking, playing at age was more of what he wanted. And so now we are very grateful for the club and very grateful for the coaches to allow this to happen. And I feel like we gave him the option to pick. We weren't picking for him because both options were fine options, either team. And the coaches came back with a solution for us, which alleviates that pressure off him. But as a parent, we learned, like, he has a big say in this, unless there's something we see that he doesn't understand. And I think parents need to take that step back and let them have that final say and listen to what their kids say. I had a parent recently tell me they had a great opportunity to go play for a great club locally, but their son's a 2015, and they had many options and they didn't know which one was the right one. And finally the kid said, I want to do all these other activities. I think this is the better option for me. And they listened to their kid and saying, yeah, you're right. That other club is not the best option because you want to do these other activities, and they don't want you to have those opportunities because they want you to focus on your sport of choice. And I feel like those parents are few and far between, because a lot of times parents are just chasing what looks good or sounds good on social media.
The most overrated thing, I think, in youth sports is winning. You know, we talked earlier about letting the child grow into their body, into their mind. And I think the most important thing until a kid is 12 or 13 years old is to get them to come back next year. I said that most dropout happens between 11 and 13. And if you lose a kid, regardless of what their talent ceiling is, he's not coming back. So the most important thing is that we get a kid to say, yes, I want to play again next year. And when we can do that, it allows them time to explore and grow into their mind and body. And you can't sit here and tell me what Christian Pulisic or Gio Reyna's soccer team's record were when they were a U12. Nobody knows that because it doesn't matter, right? What matters is those relationships that they kept playing, that they kept developing, that they kept getting opportunities. And ultimately, they got to a point as teenagers where, yeah, they were at a level now where winning does matter. Statistics do matter. But that's not when a kid's 8, 9, 10 years old. Keep them coming back. Keep them saying yes. Keep them wanting to be a part of it. Because if we lose them, they're gone forever.
That goes back to why is it worth it? The why, the goals, everything we've been talking about. I've talked about this, and it was actually a gentleman from Utah that actually pointed it out. The FA model, it's taught in the coaching model, it's hidden in the U.S. soccer coaching model for soccer, is I think it's U12 and younger, it's playing to play. U14 and younger to U12 is training to train. So you're training to learn how to train. Then once you hit U14, you're playing to win because that's when it matters. And right. I think we are skipping those first two phases of youth sports in the United States. We want to at 6 and 7. I love using my daughter's team as the example. They lost for, and everyone knows the story inside and out by now, but they lost for the first year and a half, pretty much every match. We celebrated every game. The coach didn't care that liked it, but we celebrated the players. We didn't celebrate the loss. We celebrated the players.
Love that.
The coach, I know she doesn't care to lose, but watching them play later on, they played soccer. And people give me a lot of ridicule because they're 5 and 6 years old and they were playing 4v4 soccer, but they were playing soccer. They were not playing herd ball or chasing the ball soccer. They were keeping their formation. They were taught to be creative with inside of that form. And now they're switching to 7v7 and they're getting their butts handed to them. And parents don't like losing. So I expect players to be leaving because they're not winning. But I'm looking at the success that these little girls have on 1v1s and individual moments. It's much higher than these other teams. And I find it sad that parents so focus on that W or the statistics at the end of the day that my kid scores all these goals. I as a parent, I keep track of how many goals my son scores left or right footed. I don't care how many goals. I like the ratio. If it's 50-50, I know he's doing well. I don't care how many goals he scores. Is he doing well with both feet? And ironically, he does better with his weaker foot than his right foot because he sets himself up to shoot with his weaker foot because defender's not expecting that. But that's something he's learned and something he's been taught. And I don't think parents are looking at that. They're looking at, are we winning? I think parents need to take the step back. Like you said, it's about the development, about creating that fostering, that love for whatever they're doing. At the end of the day, I've told my son, I hope you play until you're 80 playing soccer because you love it so much now. I want to see you be on a YouTube channel where it's a bunch of 80-year-old men playing soccer. And I go, I'll be long gone by that point of time, but I hope you get to that point of playing and that you still enjoy it, which feeds into the next thing is parents' behavior. You said most players drop out around the age of 13. This goes into parents' behavior and how they behave. What do parents need to know when they just are starting out with sports with their kids? We've talked about it earlier. Maybe you want to dive a little bit deeper into this.
Keep it fun. It aligns with our last conversation, and that is make sure every day that the kid comes home and is excited about their experience. And that is largely framed by the questions we ask, whether it's in the minivan ride home or around the dinner table or on the sidelines right after it's over, asking questions like, hey, what was the most exciting thing you did today? And just let them storytell. And one kind of pro tip for parents is to not ask yes, no questions, to ask questions that necessitate full answers. And this is important at the youngest ages when kids aren't prone to talk too much. And again, when they're teenagers, when they don't want to talk too much, asking questions that necessitate full, thoughtful answers and reflection on the part of the athlete. So questions like, what was the most exciting thing you did today? What did you learn today? What was maybe disappointing today that you want to reevaluate for next time? Those sorts of questions that allow the athlete to engage with their experience. And knowing the athlete is quite important here, right? Whether you can have that conversation on the sidelines 30 seconds, the training or competition, or it needs to be 10 minutes after on the car ride home, or whether you got to give them a couple hours and you're going to have that conversation around the dinner table at home, knowing your athlete and knowing what kind of deregulation they're going to need to get back down to their normal level of emotionality, where they can have that conversation in a fruitful way, I think is really important. Look, just ask them. Again, it goes back to asking them to own the experience. So rather than just get in the car and drive home and listen to music, it's oftentimes a nice place to reflect on the day.
Not berate them. I think that's the common theme.
That's one choice.
I think that's where people, but the biggest conversation is our parent behaviors when we get in the car. We sit there and ridicule them for the 2-minute drive home to an hour drive home and just lay into them.
Yeah, and like there might have been things that went sideways at the training or at the competition, but it's not our job to point those out. It's our job to allow the athlete space to reflect on those. And I guarantee your child knows, and they're just sitting in the back seat like, oh my God, here it comes from dad, right? Here it comes from mom. So just allowing them space to reflect on that and not punishing them for it, right? Sports is a game of failure, just like life. Asking those questions about, hey, what'd you enjoy most? Hey, what could have gone better? And giving them the space to reflect on what could have gone better. And that's an important way to reframe failure is what could have gone better. What could have been a success if it had gone differently? Because I guarantee, again, with that intrinsic motivation will be higher when they have to pull that from within and when they have to come up with what didn't go well rather than if you just tell them what didn't go well.
I, as a parent, the only thing we harp on is work ethic. That's the only thing I feel like we as parents can emphasize. I can't dictate how well he's going to do a skill. I can't dictate how many shots he's going to get in a game. But the only thing I tell my son, the only thing we can see is your work ethic. Make it worth your time being there and everyone else's time being there. And I think that's the only thing we ask of our kids is go out there and work hard. And that's all we ask, because hard work ethic will be a intrinsic or a lifelong skill set that you'll need for the rest of your life.
Yeah, we call those translatable skills, right? And I think being purposeful about your parenting, I encourage all parents to have a mantra. When you drop your kid at a training or a competition, have something that you tell them every time. For my family, at least for me with my kids, it's work hard, the coach, and have fun. So those are three things that regardless of the outcome of the training or competition, they can do those things. It's in their control. Work hard, listen to coach, have fun. If my kids do that on a daily basis, I know all the other stuff will just take care of itself. So finding a mantra that works for you, that creates that goal alignment between you, your kid, and the club, and leaves them with a positive message before they go out there on the field that allows them to know that you support them and you're there for them, I think can be really, really powerful.
You've talked about in many different areas now, and you've talked about it slightly, communication and goal setting. We don't always what we say and what we don't match what we're trying, the outcome. And how do you advise parents or give advice to parents to try to meet some point in the middle or have that crossing point where they can?
It's so interesting, human nature, right? Because I've done a lot of research around parent goals in sport, and they tell me all the things you might expect, right? The things that we've covered today, the leadership skills, the learning how to win and lose gracefully, respect for authority figures. They just lay all these things out. These are my goals for my child in sport. And then we go watch those same parents on the sidelines and we record them. We put little lapel microphones on them and they're not out there yelling, have some respect for an authority figure, be kind to your teammates. What they're yelling for are all those competitive outcomes, right? Scoring good compared to others. So there's this mismatch between what parents say is important and what they're actually doing. And I think that's just a flaw in human nature, that we know in our hearts and minds what's important to us. When the emotions run high, when the stakes get high, we tend to, and it's evolutionary, right? Like we tend to circle the wagons and we want our kid to have success. We want our kid to thrive, to look stronger and better than their opponents. And that's okay. But to a certain extent, we need to check ourselves and understand the downstream effects of that yelling. Right? We've all, I think, as parents of other kids, right? We see other kids out there whose parents are yelling at them and we just kind of shake our head and we see what it's doing to the kid. But we're blind to ourselves when it's our own kid, I think, oftentimes. Looking in the mirror a little bit, understanding what are my goals? That's what I should be praising. But my wife and I made a conscious decision when our kids started playing, learned to play soccer 3, 4, 5 years old, that we would only praise good passes and good defense. We wouldn't say anything or do anything when they scored goals. Everybody else on the sidelines was, their coach was yelling, their players were giving them high fives, the fans were cheering. They didn't need additional reinforcement from us. What we wanted to provide was reinforcement for the other things that they were doing well, namely being good teammates by passing and being selfless by playing defense so their team could get the ball back. And we didn't get it perfect. It's hard to not cheer when your kid scores a goal. But for the most part, we were able to adhere to that And I think now you look at my son, who's an 8-year-old and he plays midfield. He values all of those skill sets, the getting back on defense and supporting the defenders and getting the ball forward to the scorers, the hustle and the hard work, all of that stuff that we were able to reinforce. And I don't know that there's a one-to-one correlation there, but I think part of it has to be due in some way to what we valued early on when he was learning the game.
I think you're right. When my son was just starting off playing, I would probably say when he first joined club soccer, we gave him a stipend for his gameplay. And so it was based on certain criteria. So if he made an assist, he got a quarter. If he scored a goal, he got a nickel. And he made a great pass, he got 10 cents. And that's how we based it on it. And thankfully we had, because he was playing indoor and they had a camera so we could go back and rewatch the game and give him whatever he made. But there was one game he had, I can't tell you how many assists. And I'm like, my goodness, we need to change this pay scale here because we're going to go broke. Because what we thought would be motivating him to pass the ball more has transitioned even to this day. Like he will be in front of the goal and pass the ball off, even though he has a clear shot. And at times, I know it's the right decision, but just take the shot. Be a little selfish. Just be a little bit more selfish and take that shot. But because what we've instilled with him at a young age, that the assist was worth more than scoring, you see it now still in his play. Like he doesn't take those, I call stupid shots on goal that he shouldn't be taking. He'll pass the ball off and then get mad because he didn't make a good enough pass or whatever the case may be at the end of it. But as parents, I think you have to tackle it, that approach, because like you said, everyone else will praise the goal, but they hold what we say as parents more closely.
For sure. And they recognize our voice and they see us on the sidelines. What's the first thing they do when something happens? They look over and they look into us for our reaction. So the way that we respond and react to their successes and their failures, right? So if they make that pass and it gets intercepted, right? They get dispossessed on a drive or something. Are we over there pouting, crossing our arms, throwing our hands in the air? That's the first thing they're looking at. Your story made me laugh. It's like it brings new meaning to the saying, if I had a nickel for every time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And but that's the thing. It's like we made the goal worth the least amount, because at the end of the day, that was worth the least. And it was about making great tackles. It was about making great passes and making sure you're doing the assists. And we learned very quickly that didn't motivate him. What motivated him was the coach's feedback. It wasn't our feedback. It was the feedback from the coach. So we purposely went to the coach after we realized this and had that conversation, which leads us into a deeper, a little bit more into this, is it goes back to the communication side of all of this. How can this actually help us with our players communicate? Because we talk about our behaviors. It's not always the verbal. It is our body language. It's our antics. Like you said, putting our hands up in the air, crossing our arms, all that type of stuff feeds into the communication. I'm going to use my poor behavior on the sideline. I'm not communicating with my player. I'm communicating with the ref. I realize that plays into effect into his emotions in the game. The more angry I get with the ref, the more emotional he gets in his game, even though, and then he gets emotional with the ref. It doesn't deal with the gameplay.
Yeah. And you're modeling. I mean, I think, you know, this isn't a self-help session, so I'm not going to go too far down the rabbit hole. You know, you're modeling for him appropriate behavior, right?
Or right.
As it may be. So I think to the extent that you're out there yelling at the refs, thinking in your head, well, I'm not yelling at my kid. I'm yelling at the refs to try and give my kid's team a better chance at success. Well, now he and they, the team, are learning that there's value in yelling at the ref if things aren't going your way. I think one of all the roles that we fulfill as parents, I think the one that gets underestimated the most is role models, right? We are role models for our kids. And that doesn't just happen on the sidelines. It also happens with what they see us doing at home. Are we getting up early to work out in the home gym? Are we going for walks before dinner hour? Do we go to the gym during the day? Are we preparing for a marathon? What are we doing to make ourselves healthier, fit? Are we playing an adult sport league? Are we going down to the pickleball courts, right? All those things that we can model when we are on the sidelines. Are we intense but fair and collected and calm? Are we modeling all of those skills that we want our kids to have, not just in the here and now, but also as they grow up and develop? Because ultimately, one thing I've learned as a child and now as a parent is that we become our dads and young ladies become their moms. And so to the extent that we can provide that role modeling for our young people, I think they'll be better positioned to have success later in life as a result of their sport experiences.
I'm chuckling because I am my dad through and through when it comes to officials. My dad, it's a funny story. Now, even though he's passed, I still laugh at it. When my brother was a senior in high school, my youngest, I'm one of six kids, and we are, I think, 8 years apart in age, he had to sign a contract to go to school events because he would not yell at the officials, to not yell at the officials. And the funny thing is, it's like, I remember him yelling at an official at one game, then going down afterwards, having a laugh with them. It's like, they knew each other. It was not, I grew up in a small town, so everyone knew everyone. I'm digressing here, but it's the model that I grew up with. And I am trying, like I said, like, I realize that my behavior truly affects my son. And now all my conversations I have with coaches is like, how do I help myself? It's like, I'm getting advice from them. It's like, how do I break this habit that has been passed down so my kid has a success in playing sports? And I have a coach that I talk to quite a bit, and he says, you just have to realize that at the end of the day, you are the one that will ultimately make or break his career.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so I'm trying. And my wife says, you're not getting any better. So my goal this year is not to say anything during games other than when he does something good or encouraging, and not, and try to look as the officials as a person trying to do the best job they can with the tools that they have. And it's going to be a fun year.
Yeah.
With that being said,
one of the hardest jobs in sports. And you know, nobody ever, you never hear anybody yelling from the stands, great call, right? Like, it's, you never get praised when you make a difficult call. It's always the anger when things don't go the fans' way. But sports are ingrained in our society. We are passionate about sports. And as Americans, we're passionate about winning and thriving, right? Like, it's just in our DNA. It's in who we are. So you put all of that into a stew and stir it up in youth sports, and it can get a little crazy at times.
Hey everyone, I hope you all have enjoyed this episode with Dr. Travis Dorsch. If there's one message from today, the true return on youth sports isn't measured in scholarships or measured. It's measured in character, resilience, and lifelong joy of the game. In part two, we'll take this even further and dig into communication, culture, and how parents can support their athletes without crossing the line. We talk about accountability on the sideline, letting kids fail, what redefining what healthy sports and environment really looks like, and make sure to follow Chat by the Pitch wherever you get your podcast. Join us on part two of this powerful discussion with Dr. Travis Dorsch.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.
I want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross-country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's R-E-E-P-L-A-Y-E-R.com. And I think you'll be amazed.